Good evening. Four former presidents mourn civil rights icon John Lewis, while the sitting president suggests postponing November's election. And a month after attending Trump's Tulsa rally, Tea Party activist Herman Cain dies from the coronavirus. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Thursday, July 30th, 2020. And this just in, the St. Louis County prosecutor announced on Thursday the white police officer who fatally shot Michael Brown, a black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri, 6 years ago, will not be criminally charged. The officer, Darren Wilson, already had been cleared by a grand jury and a federal investigation months after the shooting. Thursday's announcement by the new prosecutor, Wesley Bell, likely marks the end of the legal saga in a case that started the global rise of the Black Lives Matter movement. Activists heavily criticized the longtime prosecutor, Robert McCullough, who led the grand jury process that resulted in no indictment. Bell, who is black, unseated McCullough in the Democratic primary 2 years ago. It was part of a nationwide wave of reform-minded people of color winning prosecutorial races. And the United States economy plunged by a record-shattering one-third in the last 3 months. The main cause is the coronavirus pandemic that's still inflicting damage to struggling businesses and forcing a wave of layoffs. The second quarter fall in the gross domestic product has no comparison since records began in 1947. Soon after the government issued the bleak economic data, President Donald Trump suggested a delay in the November 3rd presidential election. He claimed without evidence mail-in ballots will result in fraud. Meanwhile, Germany's gross domestic product, its total production of goods and services, fell more than 10%, and in Mexico, the GDP sank by more than 17%. And as the number of deaths in the United States surges to 150,000, conservative Republican presidential hopeful Herman Cain succumbed to the coronavirus earlier today. The millionaire businessman and Tea Party activist attended Trump's Tulsa rally last month before he was tested positive for the virus. He had been a vociferous supporter of Trump and opponent of mandatory masks, the most effective way to stop the spread of the disease. President Trump had this to say moments ago.
Let me begin by expressing our sadness at the passing of a wonderful man and a dear friend of mine, Herman Cain. He was a very special person. I got to know him very well. And unfortunately, he passed away from a thing called the China virus. And we send our prayers to Herman's great wife, Gloria, wonderful family. And I have to say, America grieves for all of the 150,000 Americans who had their lives taken by this horrible, invisible enemy. We mourn their loss as a nation. We mourn their loss as people that love one another. And we're working very hard to not only contain this horrible event, this horrible plague, it's what it is a plague, a blanket shutdown to achieve a temporary reduction in cases is certainly not a viable long-term strategy for any country. People are starting to understand the disease now.
And that's President Trump. In related news, another Tea Party right-winger, Texas Representative Louis Gohmert, another mandatory mask opponent, also tested positive for the coronavirus a day after attending a House judiciary hearing with Attorney General William Barr. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has since ordered a mandatory mask policy for all members of the House. And in protest news, a day after Oregon's Governor Kate Brown and U.S. officials announced a phased withdrawal deal, Oregon State Police cleared a Portland park, making at least one arrest. While Trump on Thursday said Brown was still not doing enough to rein in what he called anarchists and agitators, Trump tweeted, "If she can't do it, the federal government will do it for her." Brown responded that Trump's plan to dominate the streets of American cities after the police killing of George Floyd had failed. And this week is the last Americans will get the $600 per week expected an expanded jobless benefit, helping prop up consumer demand. Talks are at a standstill with few reasons for optimism, with bipartisan talks yet to get serious. Trump says he wants the stimulus to pass, but he's facing opposition from his own party over the price tag. Trump said the GOP should go back to school after balking at $1.7 billion for a new FBI headquarters. The site of the FBI building would be a few blocks from a Trump-owned hotel. And the latest Mars-bound spacecraft blasted off its launch pad at Cape Canaveral, Florida today. NASA's Perseverance rode a mighty Atlas V rocket into a clear morning sky in the world's third and final Mars launch of the summer. It'll search for evidence of past life on the red planet. And after a 300-million-mile trip, the six-wheeled rover carrying a camera-equipped drone helicopter will land in February. And in New York City, Con Edison is asking customers in some parts of Brooklyn to conserve energy while company crews repair equipment. About 96,000 customers are affected across Carroll Gardens, Park Slope, Sunset Park, Bay Ridge, Diker Heights, and Borough Park. Con Edison asked residents of those neighborhoods to avoid using major appliances like dishwashers and dryers and reduce air conditioner use. And the Restore Mother Nature Bond Act, the largest in state New York State history, has become another victim of the COVID-19 pandemic. The act was supposed to reduce the risk of flooding for vulnerable communities, restore habitat, and prepare the state for climate change. Today, Governor Andrew Cuomo said the vote will be postponed until next year. The governor added the COVID numbers in New York are very good. After conducting 73,546 tests yesterday, 777, or a little more than 1%, were positive. 13 people died from the virus. 586 people were hospitalized, down 33. Cuomo said it's a new low since March 17th. And newly released data from the city's Taxi and Limousine Commission shows the cab industry heavily impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. The report says only one in four New York City taxi and for-hire vehicle drivers were on the road in late June. The report indicates that the industry is coming back very slowly. By late June, demand was at 29% of last year's levels, and working drivers were earning on average 5% less than in June 2019. The city has also been employing about 10,000 TLC licensed drivers to deliver meals to New Yorkers in need. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. John Lewis was celebrated as an American hero during his funeral Thursday as former Presidents Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush delivered eulogies at Atlanta's Ebenezer Baptist Church. Former President Jimmy Carter, 95, sent a letter, and the sitting president, that's Donald Trump, was absent. The week of mourning took the civil rights icon from his birthplace in Alabama to the nation's capital of Washington to his final resting place in his home of Atlanta. Former President George W. Bush said Lewis preached the gospel and lived its ideals. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi recalled the double rainbow that appeared over Washington as Lewis lay in state in the Capitol. The speakers linked Lewis to the legacy of Ebenezer's former pastor, Martin Luther King Jr. President Obama was president when the federal government refused to indict the police officer who killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, 6 years ago. Obama gave the most political eulogy of his post-presidential career, a fiery speech that focused on the nonviolent approach to protest championed by John Lewis, but he had nothing to say about Michael Brown.
Their bones were cracked by billy clubs, their eyes and lungs choked with tear gas. They knelt to pray, which made their heads easier targets. And John was struck in the skull, and he thought he was going to die. Surrounded by the sight of young Americans gagging and bleeding and trampled, victims in their own country of state-sponsored violence. And the thing is, I imagine initially that day, the troopers thought they'd won the battle. You can imagine the conversations they had afterwards. You can imagine them saying, yeah, we showed them. They figured they'd turn the protesters back over the bridge. That they preserved a system that denied the basic humanity of their fellow citizens. Except this time there were some cameras there. This time the world saw what happened, bore witness to black Americans who were asking for nothing more than to be treated like other Americans, who were not asking for special treatment, just equal treatment, promised to them a century before. He knew that nonviolent protest is patriotic, a way to raise public awareness and put a spotlight on injustice and make the powers that be uncomfortable. Like John, we've got to fight even harder for the most powerful tool that we have, which is the right to vote. The Voting Rights Act is one of the crowning achievements of our democracy. It's why John crossed that bridge. It's why he spilled his blood. And by the way, it was the result of Democratic and Republican efforts. President Bush, who spoke here earlier, and his father signed its renewal when they were in office. President Clinton didn't have to because it was the law when he arrived, so instead he made a law to make it easier for people to register to vote. If politicians want to honor John, there's a better way than a statement calling him a hero. Let's honor him by revitalizing the law that he was willing to die for. And by the way, naming it the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, that is a fine tribute. But John wouldn't want us to stop there, just trying to get back to where we already were. Once we pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, we should keep marching to make it even better, by making sure every American is automatically registered to vote, including former inmates who've earned their second chance. By ending some of the partisan gerrymandering so that all voters have the power to choose their politicians, not the other way around. And if all this takes eliminating the filibuster, another Jim Crow relic, in order to secure the God-given rights of every American, then that's what we should do. Now, even if every bogus voter suppression law is struck off the books today, we've got to be honest with ourselves that too many of us choose not to exercise the franchise. Too many of our citizens believe their vote won't make a difference, or they buy into the cynicism that, by the way, is the central strategy of voter suppression, to make you discouraged, to stop believing in your own power. So we're also going to have to remember what John said. If you don't do everything you can do to change things, then they will remain the same. We can't treat voting as an errand to run if we have some time. We have to treat it as the most important action we can take on behalf of democracy. And like John, we have to give it all we have. By the thousands, faceless, anonymous, relentless young people, black and white, have taken our whole nation back to those great wells of democracy which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Dr. King said that in the 1960s, and it came true again this summer. We see it outside our windows in big cities and rural towns, in men and women, young and old, straight Americans and LGBTQ Americans, blacks who long for equal treatment, and whites who can no longer accept freedom for themselves while witnessing the subjugation of their fellow Americans. We see it in everybody doing the hard work of overcoming complacency, of overcoming our own fears and our own prejudices, our own hatreds. You see it in people trying to be better, truer versions of ourselves. And that's what John Lewis teaches us. That's where real courage comes from. Not from turning on each other, but by turning towards one another. Not by sowing hatred and division, but by spreading love and truth. Not by avoiding our responsibilities to create a better America and a better world, but by embracing those responsibilities with joy and perseverance, and discovering that in our beloved community, we do not walk alone. What a gift John Lewis was. We are all so lucky to have had him walk with us for a while and show us the way. God bless you all. God bless America. God bless this gentle soul who pulled it closer to its promise. Thank you very much.
President Barack Obama. Lewis spent more than three decades in Congress, and his district included most of Atlanta. Shortly before he died, Lewis wrote an essay for the New York Times and asked that it be published on the day of his funeral. Former President Bill Clinton referenced the essay during his remarks Thursday. It's so fitting on the day of his service. He leaves us his marching orders. Keep moving. Lewis died on July 17th. He was 80 years old. And a deadlocked Senate on Thursday left Washington for the weekend without acting to extend a $600 per week expanded jobless benefit. Republicans are deeply divided over their version of the bill. The House passed a $3 trillion stimulus plan several months ago. The Senate has offered a $1 trillion plan. Money for states and cities is a crucial dividing line. Local governments are pleading for help to prevent deeper layoffs as they incur COVID-19 costs and lost tax revenue. A sign of intra-party squabbling, Trump has dismissed the GOP bill as semi-irrelevant. WBAI's Linda Perry has this report.
As negotiations continue in Washington over a COVID relief package, New York City Councilmember Corey Johnson says the city is under a lot of pressure, this because of the restriction of federal funds. He uses the rent issue as an example of the complexity involved.
On the rent issue, Albany and the state legislature passed a bill, I believe it was in May or June, that would set up a voucher program for renters that have been affected by COVID-19 by taking federal funds. The state's budget deficit was bigger than even the city's budget deficit. Ours was, you know, somewhere around $9 billion. And, you know, just because we passed a difficult budget doesn't mean we solved those issues. So we still are in a really difficult financial spot, and we don't have the ability on our own to be able to create these programs because we don't have the money right now to be able to solve some of these really complex big issues. So what we really need is an infusion of these federal funds to help with renters, to help on homelessness, to help on mass transit, on the MTA, on food insecurity, on schools, on all of these issues. I mean, we can, of course, operationally do some things, but, you know, I think it's important to recognize that all these things are connected. What happens at the federal level really affects us.
New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo issued a letter to New York's congressional delegation. He called on them to ensure $500 billion in unrestricted state aid is included in any Senate-passed relief package. According to Cuomo, the former act, the CARES Act, distributed aid by a funding formula that was politically driven to favor Republican states and painful for New York. As an example, he said New York State received $25,000 for every COVID case from the federal government, and Alaska received $2.5 million. For every COVID case. The Republican COVID-19 relief bill is called the HEALS Act, the Health Economic Assistance Liability Protection and Schools Act. It agrees with Democrats that there should be a $1,200 stimulus check for U.S. workers, but there's little else the sides agree on. The HEALS Act is the Republican $1 trillion answer to the $3 trillion HEROES Act passed by House Democrats on May 15th.
Half the Senate Republicans don't even seem to support the Senate Republican coronavirus bill.
New York Representative Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries calls the Republican plan totally irrelevant. He says the Dems want to extend unemployment benefits, provide another round of stimulus payments, and provide additional funding for state and local governments, which he calls a line in the sand.
We are in a situation in this country where things aren't getting better. They are getting worse. More than 150,000 Americans have died. More than 4 million Americans infected. More than 5 million Americans have lost their employer-based health insurance. More than 100,000 small businesses have permanently closed. More than 50 million Americans are newly unemployed. Rome is burning, and Senate Republicans, along with Donald Trump, are stumbling, fumbling, and bumbling, and the American people are paying the price. In what world do they think an appropriate response to the coronavirus pandemic is to put forth a bill that sets aside almost $2 billion for a new FBI building that is currently named on behalf of J. Edgar Hoover? No support for housing. No support for food assistance. No support for child care. 50 million Americans newly unemployed. Emergency unemployment benefits scheduled to expire in 2 days. And the Republicans want to cut those benefits by $400 per week. It should shock the conscience. That is not an adequate response. It's an inhumane, cruel, cold-hearted response to this pandemic. We are going to continue to make the case to the American people, as we have done for 2.5 months.
Jeffries says the coronavirus is an extraordinary crisis and requires an extraordinary congressional intervention in the form of the HEROES Act. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
And finally, the Census Bureau reports almost 30 million Americans say they have not had enough to eat at some point in the 7 days ending July 21st. It's the highest reported level since the Census Bureau started tracking the data in May. In the Bureau's weekly Household Pulse survey, roughly 24 million of about 250 million respondents indicated they had sometimes not enough to eat for the week ended July 21st, while just under 5.5 million say they had often not enough to eat. The number of respondents who sometimes had insufficient food was at its highest point in the survey's 12 weeks. The number who often experienced food insufficiency was at its highest since the week ended May 26th. And that's some of the news for Thursday, July 30th, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News from New York, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for listening.